welcome everybody to another edition of Second Sunday Books.
I'm Libby Hellman, and I'm coming to you from Chicago.
And if you have seen my posts, you know that I just changed the name of the show from Second Sunday Crime to Second Sunday Books. And the reason I did it is because of my guest, who is Rachel Barenbaum, the author of A Bend in the Stars. And that book just came out a few weeks ago. And it's an incredible book. It is one of the most complex historical, and I'm going to say it's a thriller, because I don't, and we'll talk about this, Rachel, because I'm not sure how you mastered the art of suspense, but you sure did. And it was really difficult for me to stop reading, which is my criteria for a great book. But of course, there were a lot of other things that were great for it. So before we start, let me read you a short bio of Rachel. Rachel Barenbaum is a graduate of Grub Street's Novel Incubator. In a former life, she was a hedge fund manager and a spin instructor. Yes, she has degrees from Harvard in business and literature and philosophy. She lives in Hanover, New Hampshire with her husband, three children, and a dog named Zishi, after the folk hero who inspires many tales around their dinner table. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me, Libby. This is great. And that was amazing praise. Thank you for that.
Oh, well, there's much more to come because, as I said, I absolutely love the book. Now, before we go any further, I have one piece of housekeeping that I need to say, and I need to tell everyone that this is a copyrighted, trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Okay, now we can just talk.
Great.
Can we start with a little bit of your personal history? Your background is so 180 degrees away from a writer as I could imagine. How did the transition to writing happen, or was it always there and you just decided that the rest of the world needed to hear your voice?
I have been writing novels since the third grade, and I just have always written, and books, I devour them. I've always been a reader. And, in 2014, I was reading a Scientific American, and there was a little blurb that said 100 years ago this month, there was a total eclipse that fell over Russia, and Einstein was trying to get a team there in order to help him prove relativity, although he didn't make it because of World War I, and his team was never allowed to cross the border into Russia. And before I even put that down, I thought, this is a book. I've got to write this book. And then as I really dug into it, I kept thinking, well, why am I doing all this other business stuff if I want to be writing full time? I went into business because I had to pay back my loans and I couldn't afford to be writing full time. And it's a scary thing to quit your job and do it. I don't know. So in 2015 I did it. And then I found my agent in 2016 and I sold the book in 2017.
Wow, what a great Cinderella story. This is your debut, this is your first novel, correct?
Well, my first published novel, to be clear.
I know that one. How many practice novels did you write?
There are many in the drawer that will never see the light of day. So, yes.
I totally get it. My fourth book was the first book that got published.
Okay, so. That's pretty good.
So, I got there. When did you know that you wanted to be a writer? You said grade school, you were writing. Was this something that you just did? I mean, were your parents very bookish and encouraged you to read and go to the library and do things like that? Or was it just a way of self-expression?
I mean, I can't remember a time in my life when I wasn't devouring books or stories. And I just love telling stories because you can make anything happen, you know? And yeah. I feel like you have your best, my best friends, they're all imaginary, but they're all so real to me. I love escaping into those worlds that I build. So I can't remember when I wasn't doing it.
I was the kind of little girl where my mother would, she encouraged me to read, but she would also say, you've got to go outside and get some fresh air. And I would say, no, I can't. I have to finish my book.
Right.
All right, so you answered part of my next question was, how did you ever get the idea to write this book. And I have wondered about that. I had no idea that Einstein was trying to get there. Yeah. And for the very same reason that Vanya in your book wanted to get there, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so there were, you know, Einstein published this idea of relativity earlier, and the theory was out there, and there were the naysayers, the people who didn't believe him, because they were really standing behind Isaac Newton. I mean, because Einstein was, right, basically the first to stand up and say Newton was wrong. It was a huge, big deal for him to do that. Lots of people thought he was wrong. Lots of people came out against him because he was Jewish and said, you know, didn't believe what he had to say. But then there was a small and growing group that believed him and was behind him, and that group was also racing to, you know, find that final proof. And that included both equations and physical evidence, a photograph of gravity bending light, which could only happen at a total eclipse. Now, actually, what's interesting is the equations that he had published in 1914 were wrong. And Einstein later fixed them. He came out and he said publicly they are wrong. And then by 1919, by the time Eddington finally photographed a total solar eclipse, he had the right equations and it fell into place. But, you know, at the time, 1914, there were a lot of, not a lot, I mean, there were a number of people working on this. There were a number of expeditions planned to go to Russia for this eclipse. And as far as we know, none of them made it. But I couldn't imagine no one else made it, you know? It just seemed like such a perfect story.
You know, what I found so striking about this story is that this is a journey. Usually the journey is a tangible goal. You know, someone wants something and they go on a journey to find it. This was an idea, very simply, with most of the world ignorant of it and not understanding it. And yet you were able to make just a really engrossing story about an idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that was... that's what really drove me, because I think ideas are powerful, and they should be more powerful than weapons and things. I mean, that was also the spirit of the time. You know, the early 1900s were about the power of ideas and faith in human ability to create. You know, it was an explosion of art and philosophy and science, obviously, physics. And it was just this moment in time where ideas were powerful, and I would love to go back to that.
Really? Now, tell us a little bit, as much as you want listeners to know about the plot, without spoilers, and then I want to talk to you a little bit about the characters.
Yeah, sure. So I have, you already mentioned one of the main characters is Vanya. He is a scientist who's racing Einstein to prove relativity. When the book opens, you see that he is living with his sister, Miri, and their grandmother. It's also called Babushka. And they're sort of struggling with the idea, is it time to run? Do we have to leave Russia? As most Jews were wondering, trying, hoping they could do pogroms, anti-Semitism were really dominating, you know, the country.
Right. And yet he was an intellectual and Miri was a doctor.
Yeah, so she was one of the very first women to ever be a surgeon in Russia. So in a sense, they were very privileged in, you know, as Jews living in Russia. And, you know, then they had the eclipse. And so Babushka, the grandmother, says, we have to go now. And Vanya says he won't leave before the eclipse happens. And then, I guess, to simplify it a little bit, he goes missing. And his sister Miri goes after him. And then along the way, she's swept away. You know, she's just elevated to surgeon. She falls in love. She has a fiance. There's a love triangle. And the eclipse comes. And, you know, does Vanya get his picture? Does he get his proof? And do they make it out of Russia alive? That's the cliffhanger.
Yes. Okay, so now how did you know? Did you know about suspense and how to build suspense from your studies of literature or workshops or something? Because, you know, I know it's not a thriller, but it read like a thriller. And it really, to me, it was a thriller because, you know, a thriller doesn't always have to involve a crime. It can involve a journey such as the one that Miri took.
Yeah.
Did you know how to write suspense? Before you started writing this?
I mean, I guess I don't really know. I mean, it just, this story was, I mean, obviously I did many, many drafts, right? So what you read was probably draft 100 of this book. So probably the suspense was built in probably with each draft. But also the story is very naturally, I mean, you're building up to an eclipse. So there's a natural suspense in that. Are they going to make it? Are they going to get the equipment? Is the eclipse going to be, you know, are they going to get there? Are the other things going to stand in their way? It was just a very, you know, and they're in Russia.
I mean, I thought you were very talented at throwing obstacles in their way.
At every
turn, something else came up that was going to threaten their even getting out and getting across Russia to the eclipse. That was really well done.
Well, you know, I don't like to read books where you know what's going to happen and it's a straight line, right? So I guess that's why I like to write them with lots of twists and turns.
Yeah. Well, you did a great job there.
Thanks.
Let me ask you a little bit about Miriam. You know, in one sense, I felt that she was almost too moderate. Did you have any hesitation about, I mean, I could relate to her so well. I was like, you know, okay, let's go out to lunch and tell me about your problems. She never really seemed to get much blowback except for the operation, which she performed. And then, can you talk about that? It's not really a spoiler.
I mean, I did struggle with this. Was she too modern? How modern should she be? And I came down on the side of, I guess, pushing her modernity, if you will, because at that time in 1914, it was, boundaries were being pushed, right? People were questioning. Einstein was questioning the nature of the universe, the laws that governing, right, the way we understand light and gravity. And so I felt like it was appropriate to have her pushing those laws because yes, it was rare, but there were people, I mean, we wouldn't have women's suffrage if people weren't pushing that, right, around the same time.
Exactly.
So I think that it was, she was an outlier, but I believe that there were women like her then.
Yeah, I guess so. Tell us a little about the operation where her fiance, who's also a doctor, had to come in and rescue her.
Yeah.
What happened there? It's really more a character that really shines the light on both their characters more than it has, you know, anything to do with, a lot to do with the plot. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, that moment, you know, she, it's not clear really, I think, to the reader if she messed up, you know, or if the patient was already so far gone, it really took a more experienced surgeon. You know, maybe it was beyond her experience level. But the point of the scene is that then her fiance steps in and is ultimately the one, this is going to be her first solo surgery, but he's the one that ends up saving the patient. And really that goes to your question again of modernity, which is, you know, is she really in his shadow or is she her own self, her own physician? And I think that scene sets up, actually, we are in 1914 where the men are still stepping up and still considered the superior physicians or, you know, the people in control.
Right. I got that feeling. And, you know, yeah, I did not, I wasn't happy.
Yes.
You know, sometimes I find that at least one character in a book is really easy to write and, you know, almost writes him or herself and steals the scene when they're doing it. Was there any one character in the book that you felt that way about, or on the other extreme, was there one character that was very difficult for you to write?
I guess on the first extreme, were there any that were easy for me to write? Of the main characters, I mean, I love them and they're so real to me that it wasn't such a stretch to write them. But of course, again, they went through many drafts. So, you know, my editor would say, you know, wait, but you didn't tell us, I don't know, about what color eyes he had, for example, you know, like give us some of these details. So I did have to go back and, you know, sort of add these pieces because when you know somebody so well, you take for granted what color their eyes are. Right, and you forget to describe to people. So there was that. But in terms of the hardest characters to write, I definitely have a hard time writing the bad guys. And I think in early drafts, I tended to make them more like the Disney textbook, you know. So, but I think that, you know, to write really, you know, truly is there really, you know, to write an evil character, there's something underneath that. There's something driving them. What's there? What's their wound? And so I really had to dig into them to make them more believable. So they were the hardest for me.
Right. The best piece of advice I ever got about writing bad guys is to remember that they are the hero in their own heads.
Yes. Yes. I've heard that advice. It's great advice.
Yeah. Now, without spoilers, I'd like to ask you about one of the characters who is perceived to be less than wonderful, and that's Dimitri.
Yes.
He obviously changed because he knew the character, you know, he came into contact with Vanya and Yuri. Did he just become very fond of them? Is that, or what was his, I mean, in the beginning he was just, you know, someone that was going to hopefully, you know, looking for the opportunity to exploit them, but then things changed.
Right. I mean, I think that what I was trying to reflect there is living in Russia at that time was hard. And he was in a tough position. And even if you're inherently a good person, you're still trying to survive. You might make decisions that you might otherwise not make if you're not, you know, looking for your next meal or trying to make sure you're not, you know, conscripted and sent up to the front line without a gun, which is what was happening to a lot of Russians then. And so, you know, over time, I'm hoping that the readers will see that you can have a good person in a tough situation, and it's not so easy to judge if someone is good or bad. It's not always clear. Mm-hmm. And what do people have to do who are trying to survive?
Yeah. Now, there's not going to be a sequel to this, is there?
I'm not planning one, but I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I was just wondering because, you know, you could take Yuri's life afterwards, or you could take Miri's life afterwards when she makes it to America, those 3 years before the ending. And, you know, and do more of what you're talking about. So how people are, you know, are real and flawed and good at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea. I love what you're talking about. I guess it would depend, like, I think my agent likes to say, if readers demand it, it's something we can revisit. I mean,
got it.
I certainly hate to leave them because they are so real to me, but yeah, I think it's as it is, it's a standalone book. So
yeah. Now you started working on it when? In what year?
So I read this article in Scientific American, and that would have been August of 2014, and I really started writing probably the end of 2014, beginning of 2015.
Wow. So you mentioned that you were constantly editing and shaping and pruning the story.
Yeah.
Can you tell our listeners what that process was like? And did it change the structure of the plot significantly, what your editors suggested, or was it just...
Yeah. So I'm sure you know a lot about this editing, right? How much books change from draft one to what's published. It's amazing. And I've really come to think of it as the way that I just get to know my characters better and better and better. I think actually the biggest changes came before the book even made it to my agent, because I actually started the book as being about there's a 3-page frame that starts the book, and it happens in Philadelphia in the year 2000. And so originally my first 50 pages were set in Philadelphia in the year 2000, and it was really focused on Baba Ethel then with her granddaughter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I thought that was going to be the direction of the book. But then the more I wrote and really dug into, you know, that and the revisions, the more it was clear to me that, no, this was going to be about Miri and Vanya and Yuri and Sasha. So,
Well, you obviously had to do a ton of research for this book. How much did you already know about World War I?
Yeah, so, I mean... I did a ton of research and I didn't, because I've just always been interested in this time period and this subject and this part of history. So I've been reading about it for years and years. But in terms of, you know, specifically crafting scenes, I did a lot of research into picture archives. And one of the things that I loved the most and was really the most helpful was I found this on eBay. There was a 1914 issue of National Geographic that really that, you know, specialized or focused on Russia. And it came out right before war broke. And it was, it's just this amazing photo essay of all across the country. And the photos are so real. I mean, I felt like I was looking at, you know, an 18-year-old that I could see walking down the street here. And they just seem so lifelike. And that would, you know, for example, was how I realized, oh, right, if there's a train scene, there were goggles hanging on the side. There were, you know, you could come up with, I could visualize a lot more of the details that I needed to give the fabric of the, you know, the background.
Now, what other sources did you use? I mean, did you feel that you needed to fact check some of your research to make sure that it was accurate?
Do you mean like in terms of the relativity, the science, or do you mean in terms of
both.
Setting?
Yeah, with the science for sure. I mean, I wouldn't know relativity from humidity, but anyway. both the lay of the land, so to speak, how Russia looked like. Well, you have that National Geographic, but some of the events that led up to World War One in Russia. I'm wondering, were there any sources that you found helpful aside from the magazine?
I mean, let's see. I really tried to do a lot of visual research because I had done a lot of the reading before. But also, I mean, I just read, the Einstein and Eddington race, right? Because they were the ones who ultimately sort of partnered, although Eddington went by himself to take the final picture of the eclipse. I just really dug into, but I'd love to do this kind of reading, right? So I would read these books sort of on my own. And then if I had specific questions, you know, you could Google it, or I would end up finding, you know, an astrophysicist who I could bend their ear for a little bit, or sometimes a Russian expert, or, you know, so it sort of pieces together slowly. But also I want to say this was very organic, because these are people that I already love to talk to. So it's like, you know, amazing opportunity. Yeah.
How long did it take you to come up with those, with Yuri and Sasha and Miri, you know, the love triangle, and then how they connected to Vanya?
I mean, I knew from the beginning that I wanted Miri, a woman, to be the hero, basically, to be, you know, cutting edge, to be the... you know, really questioning, pushing boundaries, and that she would be saving her brother, because I really wanted to explore this brother-sister relationship. But I also, again, going back to how I wanted her to be pushing boundaries, a woman was expected to be married, to have babies, to listen to her husband. And so that sort of naturally lent itself to her having a fiance, but then the question of, is this the path that I want? This path that is dictated for me. Is this where I want to go, or do I want to shape my own future? So that's really the question I was looking for, which was expressed, I hope, through the love triangle.
Yeah. No, it definitely was. Yes, as soon as we met. Yes, it was. Okay. well, I was going to say something. What is it, do you think, about war, particularly in history, that attracts so many writers? And I find recently that there's a lot more women writing about it these days. I do that with my historical thrillers. They're all based on a war or a revolution. Right. But I'd like to hear your thoughts about that.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, too. That's a hard question. I mean, I guess that what was interesting to me was that the war... you know, really was the at the height of this moment where people were questioning, again, you know, art and philosophy and politics. It was all being wound together at that point, and sadly culminated, but in war. But sort of on the edge there, you have this huge, just explosion of energy and really raw humanity, I think, that is just, you know, fascinating. I don't know. What do you think? I'd love to hear what you think about that.
I feel that there, you know, editors always say you have to have conflict on every page, even if it's only a glass of water and that a character can't have.
Right.
And I look at war as the ultimate conflict because it changes everything. It changes an individual. It changes a family. It changes a neighborhood. It changes a country, and in some cases it can change the world,
right,
because of it. And the conflicts, what I love to do is to put ordinary people in these extraordinary circumstances and see how they're going to behave. And some of them, as you found out in A Bend in the Stars, turn out to be heroes, and others turn out to be cowards.
Right.
And it always surprises me who does, you know, who ends up where they do. So I use it as a vehicle to get into character.
Right.
My characters.
Right.
Yeah. That's
I like that.
That's my two cents.
I like that. And that's great.
Can we talk a little bit about the Jewish content in the book?
Sure.
I know that, you know, Jews were persecuted in Russia, as they were in other places too. Why did you decide to make the family Jewish? Or was that just a no-brainer and they had to be because the way the story was going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there are many ways to answer that. And one is, I mean, most of, you know, Russia was populated, I think it was 25% was Jewish at the time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was already such a huge percentage. And, I mean, I couldn't imagine writing anything other than Jewish characters. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I...
Yeah. My first couple of books had a lot of Jewish content also.
Yeah.
So that was another thing. And did you do any special kind of research on the Okhrana? I'm probably mispronouncing it.
Yeah, the Okhrana, the secret police. The Tsar's secret police. Not really. I mean, they were terrifying, right? The Tsar had all power to do whatever he wanted, and also this secret police force basically had limitless power as well. And so, they were just terrifying. And I had family, grandparents whose families escaped Russia, the pogroms, the anti-Semitism, who mm-hmm. Were so just out of their minds, filled with hatred and disgust for Russia and the secret police and everything. I just grew up with it, so I I had to put that in there.
Yeah, and it provided a good way to create even more obstacles for Vanya and Miriam.
Yeah.
You know, when they thought that they were after them. Do you think that the Okhrana were the instigators of the persecution, or is that something that was embedded somehow in Russian society, you know, ever since it developed?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was just anti-Semitism, pogroms are so much a fabric of Russia that I think there's no way to separate them.
Yeah, and that surprised me. I did not know that 25% of the population was Jewish.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot to have that kind of anti-Semitism. But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
also,
you know, Russia was divided. Jews had to live. Jews were not Russians. They were Jews. Mm-hmm. And they had to live mm-hmm. in the Pale of settlement, which was basically sort of the worst part of the land in Russia. And you were not allowed to leave the Pale unless you had special status. And, even then you were permitted to go into cities only during certain hours to sell things, strict quotas on, what you were, you know, certain jobs that you could take or not take. And it was pretty tough, pretty tough.
It was pretty awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I cannot imagine because we live here. Okay, back to writing for a second. What is the easiest part of writing for you?
I mean, I think always the first draft, because you can just put your sort of, you know, spill your dreams on the paper, and it doesn't matter at that point, even if it makes sense, it's your true raw emotion. And I just love that. Mm-hmm. I just love that first draft.
Do you, do you feel that, do you go back over it to make it more lyrical or to make the prose crisper, you know, after you've written the first draft? Or do you go all the way through with the first draft, or do you write maybe 50 pages and then go back and smooth them out a little bit?
Right. So I don't have a set process, but I really try to, I love plot. I love plot. Mm-hmm. I love things happening. I love action. Mm-hmm. So if I go back, it's not to make a perfect sentence. It's to make a better plot. So,
got it.
You know, I will go back, maybe rewrite the first page 100 times before I figure out what direction it's going to.
Right.
But not because,
yeah,
it doesn't sound any more beautiful by the time I figure out the plot.
Oh, well, you know, you're a very, very good writer. So
Thank you.
Yeah. What's the hardest part for you of writing?
Homonyms.
Really?
Yeah. I found during the copy editing that I seem to have a particular weakness. I think I get so drawn into the, you know, the story and the plot and the characters, and then I just make a bunch of stupid mistakes like that. So,
yeah. Oh, you know, I think there's always something in every book. Like, you know, the most recent book that I published, I think I used the word still 23 times.
Oh, wow. And how many pages? Yes.
300.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yes.
So I had to go back and fix that. And there's always some word that I keep repeating anyway.
Yes.
So homonyms, huh? Homonyms.
Yes.
For you.
Yes, yes.
Still for me. Tell us a little about Grub Street Incubator.
Yes. So this was a life changer for me. So Grub Street is an organization based in Boston, and it's amazing. And they teach classes, they promote writing at all levels, from teenage, you know, up to, you know, any age. And they have tons of classes, but this novel incubator program is run by an incredibly talented woman named Michelle Hoover, who accepts, you have to apply with a full draft of your manuscript, and she takes 10 students a year, and you work for a year with that group on your book. So you read, you know, each week you read one person's book and we critique it all together. Nobody misses any classes either. And then you go through you get a couple of, I don't know, 50 page segments, and then you get a second read at the end. And it's just an incredible experience. And then we worked together, helped each other figure out our query letters. Everyone hates the query letter, the elevator pitch. And then it ends with the Muse in the Marketplace conference, which is run in Boston. And that is actually where I met my agent. We were both early for a meeting, and we were seated at tables next to one another. And so I leaned over and introduced myself, and we started chatting. And I had my 30 seconds to get her interested. And it was amazing. It's Eve Aderman at WME. Eve Aderman at WME. She's amazing.
Oh,
and it was just, you know, all that preparation came together in that 30 seconds, you know, and then it turned into a couple of minutes. And then you just never know when you're going to meet the right person.
Well, congratulations on that. How polished was the manuscript when you were in the Grub Street program?
Yeah. So you were talking about some of the great advice that you got. I think this was one of the best pieces of advice I got too. So in the Grub Street program, I think, you know, I rewrote the whole book twice through that program. And then before I sent it to Eve, I really got the book. The advice I got was, you need to make it as perfect as you possibly can, right before you send it off, because you know, otherwise you're wasting your time and you're wasting an agent's time. So, you know, I thought this was the best book that I could have written at that moment when I sent it to her.
Apparently, the world is agreeing with you on that.
Thank you. I mean, it's a tall order, but I think that's good because if you send someone 10 pages and you're like, I don't know, like, why are you going to waste their time? Why are they going to read it if you're wobbling on it? Whereas if you say, here are my 10 pages, this is the best work I can do, right? There's a confidence behind that, and they're going to respect that. And I think that they'll see that excitement in that writing.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. I think I'll have to, you know, because I think I'm one of the insecure writers where, you know, even though I've written 15 books, it's like, well, they're going to see I'm really a fraud. You know, now everybody's going to see through me.
So, no.
Anyway. Okay, so you've given one great piece of advice for an aspiring writer. Do you have any other? Any other things that you would tell an aspiring writer?
Yes, because I ask people, you know, people will often say, well, I really am a writer, but I can't write right now, or I'm not writing right now. And I always just say, just sit down and write. It doesn't matter how bad it is. You don't have to show it to anybody. But if you don't have a page, you don't have a page, right? So just sit down and write, and that's just how you start. And you know, it'll get better the more you work on it.
Great. And what's next for you?
So, in 2 years from now, May 2021, my next book will be coming out. It's called, tentatively called The History of Time Travel, and it deals with the second part of relativity and gravitational waves. So I have four generations of a family from Russia to America of women who build the time machine in order to save the family.
Wow, that sounds wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really exciting.
Is it done? It's done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm editing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
That's exciting. Oh, boy, I can't wait.
Yeah, so that will be out 2 years from now.
So. Okay, well, we'll have to have you back.
Thank you. I'd love it.
Okay, well, that's about all the time we have.
Great. This has been a blast. Thank you so much. I really appreciate how closely you read and these really deep questions about writing and the book. It's great because, you know, not everyone likes to dig in so much. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, that's why I need to read the book before, you know, I love that. Like you, I was a reader. That's all I did.
Yeah.
Who knew I was ever going to become a writer? Surprise!
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for making the time. I know you've got to be busy with all sorts of events and things. So, readers and listeners, I'm so glad you were able to join us this evening, and we will be back again next month with another edition of Second Sunday Books.